Oh, hey. Is this on? Can you hear me okay? Do I need to turn something on here?
I'm about to get real hands.
Don't touch me. It's good to begin with an awkward moment. Breaks the ice.
Do you have to use the whole hand, Doctor?
I do. Okay.
It's kind of improvisational magic that happens at Mockingbird. All right. Well, let me pray. Dear God, help us to hear from you what you want to say to us. Thank you for the grace you have offered. Thank you for feeding us with the spiritual food of the body and blood of your Son, Jesus Christ, and assuring us through it that we are very members incorporate in the mystical body of thy Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone, but the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Here endeth the lesson, but beginneth not the slideshow. Okay. We can run it off the back. So you just heard something from the 14th chapter of Matthew's gospel. I'm going to come back to it in just a moment, but I want to ask you a question as we begin. Do you have a nighttime routine? We try to get our kids to follow one with varying degrees of success. It involves washing faces and brushing teeth, saying prayers, and sneaking back into the kitchen for snacks. My little nighttime routine is similar, except it involves strong willpower-based pledges to avoid the ice cream in the freezer, to not be sucked into a third episode of Law and Order, and to, really, I will put down my phone after this last scroll through the social meds. What usually happens after this little nighttime routine of resolutions is that I drift off to sleep covered not only in a duvet from Pottery Barn, but also a slick layer of shame and self-loathing and failure. Bluebell, curse you. You're too delicious. That joke only works in Texas, by the way. So no, I don't know what your nighttime routine is. However, if you lived in England in the 16th century or the decades after that, it is likely that you would have gone to your local parish church and would have taken part in a little service called evening prayer. Or maybe somebody, the head of your household, would have led that service in your living room. By the way, we all just secretly made you Episcopalians. That little service you just participated in, I don't know how to break this to you, but that's from the Book of Common Prayer of the Episcopal Church. So, welcome. So, you would have said a little prayer service called Evening Prayer from the Book of Common Prayer. And in the old school book, the one that is still the official prayer book of the Church of England, the 1662 edition of the prayer book, the one that they use in the royal weddings and all that sort of stuff, you would have had to say three prayers at the end. Three collects, they call them. And there were some optional ones, but there were three that you had to say. And the last one, if I could go forward, probably about 8 or 10 slides, it's the one that shows a prayer titled, For Aid Against Perils. No, we've already passed the bluebell. Yeah, there we go. So this is what they had to say every night. Lighten our darkness, we beseech thee, O Lord, and by thy great mercy defend us from all perils and dangers of this night. For the love of thy only Son, our Savior, Jesus Christ. Perils and dangers. Sounds like a prayer you might have said on your way into a middle school dance. Deep breath, I'm going in. Heaven help me when they start the electric slide. Always seem to get out of sync on that one. I hope that was meaningful to some of you. Yeah, you know, back then, nighttime was a big deal. No artificial light, and no home security system. We like to push our little buttons on the keypad, and we hear that beep, 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 and we feel safe because a loud noise always prevents evil. And of course, back then, no white noise machines to lull you off to sleep. You had plenty of natural noise, the things scurrying under your bed or the noises outside, the wild beasts, the owls. I don't know, people like to think camping is relaxing. We were in Big Bend last spring break, and the coyotes, not so soothing. Pretty close, actually. But at least I had a nylon wall between me and them. You know, nighttime back then, not playing around. And you can understand why they might have prayed for aid against all perils and dangers of the night. Now, these days, we have our houses, our walls, the things that keep us safe and make us feel secure in our nighttime routine. But I have noticed, even still, when we lay me down to sleep, that prayer still works. It's just we're afraid of different things. The perils and dangers of the night. I visit a lot of people as a pastor, and early in my ministry, I noticed as I would go to people's homes to take them communion, to pray with them, to anoint them with oil if they were sick, I would notice that the TV would be on when I got there, and it would stay on the whole time, and I presume after I left. And I wouldn't always notice it at first. We would sit down, and we would talk, and we would pray, and we would begin that prayer, Our Father who art in... Oh, what's up, Bill O'Reilly? You are still angry. Can we mute that? You know, it was sort of that thing. The TV would just be on all hours, and I would find out that people would just sleep with it on, just go to bed with that in the background at all times. I remember early in ministry meeting a young woman who was, I felt, too young to have the level of anxiety that she did, and she said she always had the TV on in her house at all times because she couldn't bear the feeling of emptiness and loneliness. I want to talk today about fear, Jesus, and the wonder of grace. Now, why do I want to talk about fear? Well, there is a band called the Cold War Kids. They met at, yeah, thank you, I'm not a member. They met at BIOLA in Los Angeles, which used to stand for Bible Institute of Los Angeles. Now it stands for BIOLA. Like FFA, used to be Future Farmers of America, but now it's just FFA. Keep the acronyms alive, people. Anyways, they have a song on their most recent album. This is it, L.A. Divine, and it's No Reason to Run. Let's see if we can get some sound going here.
intervention. I've tried to fly so low. It's not a question of whether I will fall. It's how hard I hit the floor. When did I feel it?
What if all our decisions are fear-based? I think Nathan, lead singer, is on to something. For a lot of people, fear is really the driving and dominant motivation for everything they do in life, every day decision they make, every choice, every breath they take, every move they make. It reminds me a little bit of that old Johnny Cash song, "How High is the Water, Mama?" 5 feet high and rising. There we go. We're surrounded by a flood of situations, raging torrents of what-if scenarios. Brené Brown likes to say we dress rehearse crisis and catastrophe. We go through it in our mind. Because that way we can be prepared for when the worst happens. So here's where we're going to go this morning. I'm going to talk a little bit about what we're afraid of. Julie Andrews will make an appearance. We're also going to talk about Jesus Christ, St. Peter, with T-Pain on a boat. And some of you may not get these. That's okay. It's not for you. And then we're going to talk a little bit about when our deepest fears come true. Can we get a little help? Where is the wonder of grace in that? So, what are we afraid of? Now, you guys know who this is. Saint Julia, as Maria von Trapp. She is the patron saint of denial. There's that scene where there's that storm in the von Trapp household, and all the children run to her bed for safety, and they're gathered around, and she says, "When anything bothers me or I feel unhappy, I like to think about nice things." And then she begins, you know, raindrops on roses and all that sort of thing, you know, which is why in the rarely seen sequel to Sound of Music, Maria has a very prominent eye twitch, and she smokes heavily because she's repressed so much. So I like to offer the antidote. Brown dried up roses, scratches of kittens, piled dirty dishes, and I can't find my mittens. Porch stolen packages, my missing key ring. These are a few of my least favorite things. So in no particular order, maybe your song would include some of these things. Of course, they're the basics. Cold sores, being seen by the PTA president at the grocery store when you are a hot mess, which, let's face it, all the time. Death is up there. For me, it's the specter of how Sarah Condon kills it at every Mockingbird conference, and can I hold a candle to that? There's also, death, of course. Let's also look at these bigger things. Your parents, I don't care how old you are, there can often be fear there. Maybe you're at a stage where you're afraid that they'll find out who you're dating. Maybe you're afraid that they'll find out what you actually want to do with your life. You're in a major right now that you hate, or maybe you actually completed it and there's deep resentment. Maybe they'll find out what you are actually doing with your life. Maybe they will find out the reason you don't want to come for Thanksgiving is because of how Dad acts when he's drunk. All kinds of things you might be afraid of with your parents. Maybe it's that conversation that it's time to stop driving, or it's time to move into a full-time care facility. You should have had that conversation 8 years ago, but you're terrified. Maybe you have some fear around your children, loss, or that they would be involved with a bad crowd, or that worst thing, they might be bad at sports. It's a big fear in Texas. maybe you're afraid of your spouse. Maybe you are afraid of provoking some sort of reaction. A lot of people feel like they're walking on eggshells because you could say the wrong thing. A lot of people have just a volcanic rage inside that can erupt like that. And so life is just about not letting that happen. It could be that there's a credit card you opened that you don't want your spouse to find out about. Could be that there's just something going on that is just a desperate secret, some trauma in your past. Maybe you are not married and you're just scared of never being married. Maybe you are scared of marrying the wrong person. Is the one you're with now the one? What if you marry the person you think is the right one, but there's a righter one out there? What about what Paul Zoll calls the boys in the basement? These are the things deep within you. This is your secret life. This is your Patrick Swayze and Donnie Darko. This is the trapdoor in your living room. If you're a blacklist watcher, your secret stash of passports and ammunition. That's under. You know, what's your secret life? Jacob Smith, the rector of Calvary St. Church in New York, who has been a frequent speaker and is the host of the Mockingbird conferences in New York, likes to say that we're all about 3 days away from being in the tabloids, and most of us are living on day two. You know, what do you have going on? I mean, let's just get it out there. Is it an eating disorder? Is it cross-dressing? Is it your internet habits? Is it your collection of Hummel figurines? What are you most ashamed of? Maybe you're afraid of being alone. It was on the Mockingbird blog a few weeks ago, the fact that in the United Kingdom, Parliament has appointed a minister of loneliness. They found out that of people over 70 years old, 75% of them live alone, and of those, a third of them have not had an interaction with a human being in 2 months. And it's not too much different here. The despair and the loneliness. Listen to the podcast that Dave and Charlotte and I recorded yesterday about the epidemic of opioid use in this country, and a lot of it has to do with just getting out from the tragedy of existence and the loneliness and despair. So the Beatles sang about Eleanor Rigby in the 70s, "Where do all the lonely people come from?" And they're still with us, and it's probably gotten worse. So those are some things you might be afraid of. There's also that failure thing. That's a big one for a lot of people. A lot of people go through life not trying anything or risking anything because it might not go perfectly. It's the whole Will Hunting philosophy of life. You know, never love anyone. That way you might never get hurt. And I think all these tie back to one big thing. It's fear of rejection. If people find out who you are, if they find out your secrets, they will reject you. They will drop you like a hot rock. If you were ever turned down for a date, I would bet that you remember it like it was yesterday. Allison, if you're out there, that hurt. You know, middle school was all about unrequited love and, you know, feeling like you had a thing for someone and you wondered if they had it for you, but you could never make the first move. You went through all these back channels and note passing and things to try to figure out how they feel about you, because if you put yourself out there and they give you the Heisman, you know, that hurts. Rejection is a big deal. I thought it was interesting that Matt McGill, who seems okay, but we learned last night, deeply insecure guy, still remembers so vividly that feeling of being the only kid not picked for the team. And if you were like me, yeah, just bring it up. Re-traumatizing, it's my service to you as a pastor. So, any Friday Night Lights fans? Yeah, so that's something that we definitely love a lot at Mockingbird, the TV show that ran for 5 years, filmed in Austin, Texas. And the assistant pastor at the church where I work ran into Kyle Chandler at a parking lot in Austin and was just like, reflexively, no thought, "Coach!" And just, you know, "I got daddy issues. Come here, bring it in." So, that show, Brian Grazer, who was the producer and guy that was kind of his brainchild, he gave an interview to Tim Ferriss in which he said that show was basically born out of his need to work through the rejection he experienced in high school when he was cut from the football team in front of everybody else on the football team. It's a real deal, this rejection that we feel. And you ever wonder why rejection hurts so much? I mean, we reflexively just respond to this fear of rejection. We make certain decisions and go down one path and not another just to avoid rejection. Conversations we don't have, things we don't do, dreams we don't pursue. Do you ever wonder why you're so scared of rejection? Why you're so scared of the big no? I mean, your heart would still be beating, most likely. And I think it connects with something where we are not really sure if we're worth anything. We're not really sure if we're loved. We're not really sure if we're valued. And to lose those crutches that prop up our sense of self-assurance or security or our facade or whatever, to lose those things is terrifying because it cuts to the existential core of who you are. So the result of all this fear that we're living with, we hide. We stay in secret. We stay unknown. We avoid risk. We avoid even the possibility of failing. As the Cold War kids said, all of our decisions are fear-based. So we stay hidden. Okay, so now the God part. What do we do with this reality in which we live, our fear? Well, we read Matthew 14 at the beginning, and as you might have heard, there's a lot of fear in that passage. Just over and over, Jesus comes to the disciples, Rick Ocasek style. Any Cars fans? The Cars? Rick Ocasek, the lead singer, caused a lot of controversy in the video for It's Magic by walking on a swimming pool in the video. They said, no, only Jesus gets to do it, not rock stars. I beg to differ, but anyways, that's neither here nor there. Jesus comes walking to the disciples on water, and it says that even before that, though, they were already afraid because the storm had come up, and they see Jesus walking. It says they're terrified. It's a ghost. They cry out in fear. I mean, just there's terror here. You know that feeling that you have when somebody cuts you off in traffic or there's some sort of terrifying incident and you see your life pass before your eyes and your whole body clenches and the adrenaline floods your bloodstream? I mean, that's the kind of fear that we're talking about. They could die. It's bad enough to be in a little boat on a stormy sea and then a poltergeist comes walking towards you, basically, like a shadowy figure walking on the water. What's going on? And they cried out in fear, and Jesus speaks to them and saying, take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. And Jesus says do not be afraid a lot in the scriptures. It's one of the most frequently quoted things. He says it all the time because people are always afraid. And Peter says then, Lord, if it's you, command me to come on the water. He steps out of the boat famously. And again, don't think Rick Ocasek and It's Magic just kind of chilling on the swimming pool. It's a storm, so think Whitecaps. Jesus is going to be climbing over, and Peter's going to probably have to step out and sort of climb. I mean, think like moguls if you've been watching the Olympics, getting over these huge hills in the water. And so Peter starts to come out to Jesus and sees the wind and the waves, is afraid, and starts to sink and cries out, Lord, save me. Now, this is one of those passages in the preacher playbook. I know a lot of preachers here. You know that there's some passages where when you read it, there's something you're supposed to say about it. There's like the received interpretation of the passage. And the received interpretation of this passage is that Peter's mistake was taking his eyes off of Jesus. So if you're afraid, keep your eyes on Jesus. See, eyes on Jesus. Because that's the thing. Peter, he put his eyes on the wind and the waves. It says he saw the wind and the waves and he was afraid and began to sink. So he took his eyes off of Jesus. But I want to say wrong. I'm going to throw the flag on the field on this one. You know, there's nothing really sinful about looking at wind and water. I checked the Ten Commandments. It's not in there. And so he's, I mean, remember, he's standing on water. You can't blame him for looking around a little bit. And he got scared because there was a storm. This is common sense. This is a reflexive fight or flight, non-voluntary nervous system response. The point of the story is not verse 30. That Peter looked at the wind and the waves and began to sink. The point of the story is verse 31. Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And my point to you today is that in his fear, while he was scared, while he had little faith, Jesus reached out and grabbed him. Somebody in your life has probably told you the lie that if you had enough faith, Jesus would reach out and grab you. Well, just point them to verse 31 of Matthew 14. While Peter had little faith, Jesus says it, he calls it as it is, he reached out his hand and grabbed him. Immediately. Didn't let him flounder a moment longer. So we say, keep your eyes on Jesus. I mean, what does that even mean? Keep some magic laser beams, like trained on him or something. Have a picture on your kitchen wall and just look at it a lot. Read your Bible a lot. Is that what it means to keep your eyes on Jesus? I mean, the thing is, Jesus was in front of Peter the whole time. Peter was never not aware that Jesus was there. Kind of hard to forget when you're standing on the water with him. So that's not the thing. And again, it's not the thing that he had little faith. It's not the thing that he was scared. The thing in this passage, the main thing, is that even while Peter was scared and even while he was doubting, God held his hand and rescued him. And let me put it another way. The reason Peter had this incredible encounter with Jesus Christ, the Son of the living God, the reason his hand held the hand of God is because his worst fears were coming true. It's because he was sinking that he reached out. And it's because he was sinking that he held the hand of God. He was drowning. His life was out of control. And in that, he met Christ. In his doubts. Not while he's looking at Jesus. So, here we are. We're nearing the end here of this little talk. And at this point, I'm supposed to tell you how to conquer your fear. There are some hot coals we've set up in the lobby. And if you would remove your shoes and socks, we will go through a little exercise while playing Countdown. Final Countdown is what we're going to be playing, followed by Eye of the Tiger. And Welcome to the Jungle, but that's for Dave, special request. So, no, this is the thing. We think to conquer our fears, there's some trick. And, you know, yes, if you have crushing anxiety, I encourage you to see a therapist and explore the medication that God has given us through the miracle of science. I encourage you to pray. I encourage you to practice mindfulness. That seems to work for a lot of people. It's helped me. But here is the thing. You will never not be scared. There will always be something that because you're a normal human being who loves other people and doesn't like pain, you will be scared. And sometimes cripplingly so. I mean, you want to have some fear. It protects you from things, right? Protects you from open flames and the mistake of buying a ticket to a 90s hip-hop reunion concert. Naughty by Nature did not age well, I just gotta tell you. They were good then. So, you might not conquer your fear, though, and your worst fears might come true. And I think, you know, they kind of go under the categories of loss and catastrophe, personal catastrophe. Loss is loss. Personal catastrophe might be your secret life coming out, the truth being exposed, your anxiety getting the best of you, whatever that might be, your personal catastrophe. And what I want to point out to you is that in this passage from Matthew 14, Peter's worst fears came true. He was looking at death. And later on in the gospel, his other worst fear came true, loss. He lost his friend, Jesus. There's that famous story where Peter confesses the Christ, "You are the Christ, the Son of God." And Jesus says, "Gold star." And then Jesus says, "I'm going to die, you know." And Peter says, "No, you're not. That's never going to happen." And that's where Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." But that was his other worst fear, losing Jesus. And that one came true too. And of course, in addition to the personal catastrophe and failure and faith he had here on the Sea of Galilee, there was another one near the end of the story. Remember, Jesus said, "You'll deny me three times tonight after I'm arrested. You'll deny me three times." And Peter said, "Never, Lord. I will stick with you to the end." You know, it's amazing how we criticize people who show fear or cowardice in a stressful situation. And I want to point at Peter, our founding saint. When Jesus was arrested and Peter was standing there and given three chances to stick up for the Lord, he failed once, he failed twice, three times a lady. It's never wrong to mention Lionel Richie. Peter failed. Peter failed abysmally. He promised not to do it, and he did it. He had a personal catastrophe in which who he thought he was, strong, faithful, leader of the disciples, just shattered, pieces on the ground. But because these things happened, it seems to me that Peter was in a place to receive grace because he was no longer laboring under the illusion that he didn't need it. No more illusions. So that when his personal catastrophe happened, he could find grace by the shores of that same lake, the Sea of Galilee, where after his resurrection, Peter would meet Jesus, and Jesus would ask him, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?" And Peter, as he had denied Jesus three times, would say three times, "I love you, Lord," and would be reinstituted in his ministry. In his catastrophe, Peter could find forgiveness. And through his other worst fear coming true, the death of Jesus Christ, he was able to have those sins washed away. So for you, my scared brothers and sisters, what if your worst fear came true? What if the truth came out? What if the secrets were revealed? What if the loss happened? What if the dream died? You would still be loved by God. And you would still find his hand outstretched to rescue you immediately. And you would find him there with grace as you are stripped of your self-justification and illusion of control to be open to what he might want to do for you. When Peter saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately took hold of him, saying, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Amen. Thank you.